the dream of, you know, taking that pressure off of yourself creatively and letting it be, because I think that's what a good creative should be and where it should come from, is just true natural expression.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Cloud Machine Podcast. My name is Matt Landry, and in this 61st episode, I'm here with No Disco's Chris Tufexis. Throughout the podcast, we discuss his artist project, writing processes, influences, the need for balance and stability as an emerging artist, the importance of discovering new music, his origin story, the music business, and much, much more. We also play the producer's game. Thanks for listening. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Cloud Machine Podcast, a platform that allows us to learn more about the music industry through conversations with artists, people in the behind the scenes, music business individuals, creatives, and much more. This podcast is brought to you by Eights, a musical direction and playback company out of Toronto. Our goal with this podcast is to create a network and shine a light on all the stuff that is happening in the music world, topics and realities that are gatekept, and the people and roles that may often be overlooked. This week, I have the immense pleasure of welcoming No Disco's Chris Tufexis to the podcast. He is an artist, musician, writer, music library, and much more. I met Chris through my friend group in Toronto, and more recently, Aids has been entrusted with working on No Disco's live show. We've been stoked on their past few performances with No Disco, and through that, we've had some great conversations. So I thought it would be great to have Chris on for a recorded hang. So please welcome to the podcast, Chris Tufexis. Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing, Matt?
I'm fantastic. Thanks for joining us here. It is Easter weekend in the morning. So again, thanks for coming on. Let's start the podcast how we always start the podcast. Your favorite live show experience as a fan? What you got for that?
As a fan, I would say I'm really into this singer-songwriter, Noah Gunderson.
Okay.
And he traditionally kind of made like indie folk records. And a couple of years ago, he made this album called White Noise, which is unbelievable. A really, truly overlooked, amazing, diverse, sonically just incredible record that he played the Opera House, funny enough.
And okay, yeah.
He played the record from top to bottom, which you don't really see a lot.
Right.
Which honestly, I think is great. I think it really like makes an album cycle really hit home when you do that.
Yes.
So he did that. He played the record from top to bottom. And, you know, there's some indie folk on it. There's some like pop rock. And there's this one song on the record that starts super slow and becomes this almost like doom metal song.
Okay.
Hearing that live was really unlike any live experience I've ever had.
Wow.
So I highly recommend that record, and that tour, that show was just unbelievable.
Yeah. There's something about playing a record like front to back live that is like, it's almost like it's not expected, and also, but also like at the same time, like art, like the audience can sort of predict where you're going, you know,
but
you can like surprise the audience in that way. I remember a few years ago, John Mayer did the same thing, but only like at a few stops during the tour. He now has the discography to do anything basically in a certain night. And I believe his band just rehearses like 50 songs, and they can do whatever from that set list sort of every night on tour. And one of the nights, I think he played Continuum at Madison Square Garden front to back, which he hadn't done before. So no, I just really like when artists do that and take us on the journey and relive that experience from front to back. Fantastic. Okay. Is there the second question? Is there a project/campaign /era that would best represent your work for the people that don't know No Disco?
Yeah. I would say like the thing with me is I put out obviously two EPs. And what I wanted to do each time was create a very like in-depth story that's being told through the record.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess like the first record did a really good job of that. It was a really all-encompassing kind of work of art where the record was about a past relationship of mine that ended, and it was seven songs, and from the first song to the last, it was like the relationship chronological order.
Yeah. But
in doing that, me, my friend Chris Borges and Christian Fortino, over like the year or so that the record was kind of cycling out, we like all the visuals took place in my room, and I was kind of like trapped right. in my room and kind of, overwhelmed by despair. And we kind of we designed my room in this really picturesque, like cinematic way. And it was very much like on purpose. I wanted the listener to truly like see the project as this like, cinematic experience with a pretty strong narrative. And even the physical copies I did for that, which is probably my favorite, the artistic output I'm most proud of, was I made the CDs, and my room was covered in like 90s Rolling Stone magazines, and I kind of tore them up. Like once it was time to like take the wall down, I tore sure. them up, and I hand wrote the track listing on every like a different Rolling Stone ad.
Yeah.
And then I slipped them into the like seat, the jewel case, and I sold them as like very unique kind of copies. And as a listener, you're like, wow, I like saw this room develop through this album cycle, and now with a CD purchase, I'm like getting a piece of the room rather than like, here's a CD that you can put into your thing.
It sure. Like, yeah. Yeah.
When you're buying it, you're literally getting a piece of the whole like record cycle or a piece of my room.
Yeah.
I would say that pretty well encompasses what I do. I really truly just think from like the fan perspective, and I love really being totally engulfed in a creative work, and
yeah,
that's how I like to create.
Yeah, it seems like you like, well, just from the first two questions, it seems like you like a lot of like full projects and the full album cycle, and the physical copy, and you mentioned the album being front to back at your favorite live experience. Do you find that you like the full project? Like, are you more of an album guy, or are you more of a singles guy? Like, that's a big question that I get all the time. Yeah. Are you an album guy? Do you listen to albums on the road, or do you put on a Spotify playlist? That's what I get all the time. What about you?
Yeah, I had this problem growing up where like I had to like the whole album. Like,
sure.
I almost would keep things out of my collection if I didn't like the whole thing. Like if I could sit down and listen to it top to bottom, it was like, I would sometimes go back to it to listen to a single or whatever that I was into, but like,
right.
I very much am, very particular about full albums. And I think that the reason why is, as someone that listens and knows obviously the process behind it, I like to get ahead of the people that made it and go like, okay, well, why is this song here? And like, why is it important for this song to be here? And when it feels like that's not the case, I'm not like totally thrown off, but I'm just, it doesn't get me as into it. And I like to really, really be into an album, and the albums that I collect like mean a lot to me because they're complete and
clear
with a lot of thought and effort into making a complete work.
Do you have it's not planned, but do you have like a top three albums, but not just the music, but like we're talking about physical copies, packaging, story sort of world, do you have like a few that come to mind for you specifically?
Well, yeah, I would say like my favorite album ever is Hats by the Blue Nile. It's like I've never heard an album that is so that so well and captures just like love and despair and you know just reminiscing on the good times while the soundscape is so like downtown city lights and just empty streets and rain and the whole album plays like that. And obviously now I'm in a very loving, happy relationship, so I don't, it doesn't hit me the same, but
sure.
In my life that, you know, you're going through it and romance ain't treating you right. It's really nothing like it. It's truly one of a kind. And I own the vinyl and it's pretty rare now, so I'm pretty stoked on that. I would say that's definitely my favorite record. And like another one off the top of my head, I really, really love the Silent Hill 2 soundtrack. I'm a video game guy, particularly like older games, and Yamioka did all the music for the Silent Hill games and also like the movie. And again, it's something about like he just created such an incredible soundscape that I've never heard before. And with instrumental stuff, I find myself like in my later 20s now, I like it as just like a way to just put it on and not really pay attention to it. Like I listen to some Eno and you know, other guys, but there's something about, and when I listen to, you know, I'm listening, but like there's something about the Silent Hill 2 soundtrack where I can actually put it on and be listening to every track and purposely kind of listening to it and listening to all the sounds and going like, how did he make that sound? And
right,
just the atmosphere it creates is just unbelievable. So I'd say that those are like two of my top albums ever for sure.
Fantastic. Moving on to the next question, it's more of the music business type questions. It's but it's this quote segment of the podcast. For those of you that have been listening for over a year now, know that we do a quote every single episode, and we've divided it per year. So the first year was the Erykah Badu quote, which compared music business and music as the art form, and this year it's a Joni Mitchell quote. This is the quote. She says, "I heard someone from the music business saying they are no longer looking for talent. They want people with a certain look and a willingness to cooperate." This is in an interview with Robert Hilburn of the LA Times in 2004. Now, to note as well is that she doesn't like this or doesn't agree with this. And I'll repeat the quote again. "I heard someone from the music business saying they are no longer looking for talent. They want people with a certain look and a willingness to cooperate." Now, Chris, what are your first instincts when you hear this sentence? Let's start there.
I definitely understand it. I feel like, especially since COVID and TikTok and all that, like very easy to blame how, you know, how much the industry has changed. And what's interesting to me about that quote is the fact that that was even being said by Joni Mitchell back then.
Yes.
And still whining about it today.
Yes.
That's very interesting to me. And I think that I went through a really tough time of, you know, thinking the same and going, well, how does X person get there? And like, what did they do differently? And what connections do they have and whatever?
Right.
And I don't know. I went through a really tough time with that, and now I don't think of it like that. Like,
yeah,
it's just, I don't think music is the only industry that happens. Like, you know, it helps to have connections in whatever space. It could be any corporate job too. Like, connections help with job interviews and references and everything. Like,
yeah,
it happens across industries. So I do agree that, like, you know, when it comes to being signed to a major, I'm sure that they like kind of have a say in like what you do and whatever. But, you know, as an independent, I was able to create the exact way I wanted to. And no one told me what to do. Did I make the top record in the world? No. Did I create something that I'm insanely proud of that will span forever? And, you know, I got to create because of independence.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like there's two ends to it. And I think it just depends what you value the most. And for me, yeah, it would be great for me to have like huge, huge shows and people are kind of puppeting me around, but you know, I'm pretty happy where I'm at now, where I'm able to create on my own kind of instincts. Like, you know, yeah. I haven't been writing too much recently, but I have been kind of thinking about a record and I'm taking my time with it and really being intentional with it. And it's like, I don't think I would have that freedom otherwise. So it's like, I think you got to see, you know, the negative and benefits to that.
To being independent, you mean?
Yeah, to being independent and not cooperating.
Sure, yes.
Thing. Because, you know, along Talk at Taylor's, I like wrote like a short story that was paired with it. And I had a really hard time being like, how do I TikTok this? I don't know.
Yeah, sure, sure.
I just went, you know what? I created something really cool. And like,
yeah,
I had forever to share it somehow. Mm-hmm. But, like, it wasn't like, I didn't have this like campaign where it was like every day I got to post this much about the story. Yeah. I wanted to just create that story and have it be a thing. And if people read it, cool. And if not, maybe they'll read it in the future. Like yeah. I've tried to like, you know, not have that urgency with art and just create and have things come to you rather than like, I think that the TikTok culture has created this like urgency with art rather than creating and letting it breathe and creating to create rather than creating to be viral, you know?
Yes. And I just wanted to touch on something that you said as well. It was like creating a story. And we've been talking about over the past 10 minutes about like, you like the whole album art form. I just find it hard to market a complete album on TikTok. I find that it's very much like a singles game. And it's hard to get the whole picture. And as an artist, if you want the whole picture to be the first thing that people see, it's sort of hard. But mm-hmm. It's not the wrong thing to do. It's just hard to market on these platforms. So just a second on that. But also a thing you said as well is that even if you created it then and people didn't check it out then, it doesn't mean that they're not going to check it out in the future. Like art is forever, like you said as well. And it's great. If you put out a record or if you put out a single, it'll always be there. So art isn't like the success of music and art isn't necessarily based on the first week that it's out. And I think that's like really important to just reflect on, I guess. Yeah. Moving on to the next question. How is the business part of your career viewed right now? Like how are you dividing the art and the business part, and where do you sit there?
Honestly, recently I haven't, and that's been a really nice mind vacation for me to
yes
not have to you know stress about that too much. But I think the hard thing about music is like, you know, because right now I work at a startup for like, you know, my job and, you know, any other business requires like a ton of funding and like all this stuff to like keep the gears going, because, you know, every business, every startup like needs money to run. So yep. Like music, what's so interesting to me about it is like, it's so business, but when you get into it, like, unless you're told before you go in, no one would ever know. And it's just like,
right.
So important to literally just treat it like you're running a startup. So like, you know, thinking about funding and thinking about, you know, where you're supplying the merch and like all these things are like the average artist, I don't think like necessarily thinks like that, and not to their fault. I think that that's how it should be. And that's why I guess managers get involved and like take, you know, take control of the business side. But
yeah,
for me, I think it came to a point where I started to not like the business side just because I was so overwhelmed with like, how am I going to fund the next record? How am I going to fund this? How am I going to fund that? When I do X show, I make X money, but like I have so many expenses. So like, when do I ever make money? But like, if you ask any small business owner too, they'll be like, it was years before I started profiting.
Right. You know, sure.
Pay employees. They had to, you know, take loans to fund whatever for like, it's just the name of small business. And I think that we're just not told that when we're just like, oh, I'm making some music and let's go tour and stuff. Like you don't yeah. think, hey guys, we're starting a startup. Is everyone ready? Like,
yeah. Yes. That's yes.
how it should be for everyone. Like when it starts kind of popping off, everyone should be stopped and been like, hey, just so you know, you're about to start a small business. So get ready.
And yeah.
You just need to be prepared for it. I think I kind of had an inkling, but I think it just became, you know, far more demanding than I expected. But I don't know. Like now I really enjoy it. I love, you know, I do enjoy the business side, but it sometimes just makes it really hard to be creative. And I found that like around the time of A Long Talk of Taylor's, I just like, I was finding it very hard to find enjoyment in the creative because I was just so just overstimulated with all the demands from like the business side and just being overwhelmed with like, you know, how to fund things. And da, da, da. So
yeah, marketing and TikTok marketing. And socials and whatever. Yeah.
It's really, really crazy. And what I always thought of was like, because I always kind of like compared myself to like the 90s and the eras before me and kind of just like did some woe is me stuff like back last year. But it's true. It's like, yeah, you had to create back then, but you weren't responsible for the real push of like,
yes,
your stuff. Like you would create a music video. And then your label would give it to MTV or Much Music and it would be played in front of people and your job was done. You show up to the music.
yeah, exactly.
You air guitar and your job. And
yeah.
People watch that video and now they're going to go see you on tour. Now it's like every day you got to wake up and be like, yep, I got to promote myself. I got to promote myself. And it's just undeniably exhausting. Like,
yes.
I don't think it's natural for the artist to be, again, I think that this is something that I haven't really said before, but I've brought it up during this talk now. And I think that this is one of the most important things is like the urgency is just not good for art. I don't think.
Like, yes. Yeah.
This like need, like rather than like creating and with art, obviously you're going to always have to promote it somehow. Like if you're a painter, you got to have galleries and whatever, but TikTok has created this like real urgency and just it's and just the competition and everything. It's just like it's not natural.
Yes.
Say.
Yeah.
So
it yeah it, and over the past few months I really think like since January I've been having a lot of talks with artists about just like basically them realizing that they're basically the ones responsible for the art, but also for the marketing and self-promotion because TikTok and social media specifically are now axed on like authenticity and like doing it yourself, even like for like huge, huge, huge celebrities and in regards to like doing the video themselves from their bedroom or from their kitchen or whatever. And artists are now slowly realizing that they're responsible for the art, but also the self-promotion And it's super hard. And I just wanted to touch on that because that's basically what we've been talking about, is that you're saying that in the 90s, artists could just basically hand off their album and be like, okay, now your turn. Like, label people, like, this is your turn to now market the record. And I'll be there at the events that you want me to be there at, but it's now your turn to do the thing. But now in 2024, we're seeing a lot of artists that need to, yes, do the record, but also market and wake up and do TikToks like you were saying, and go on tour and do the photo shoots and do the whole things. So,
But it, yeah,
yeah.
it, what was I gonna say? Yeah, so it's kind of like made me rethink, like, even like label deals. Like, for example,
Yes.
if I think about like the old label deals, I don't know what they all looked like, but like, considering like how much the label actually had an impact on you being seen, which is like, for example, the handing a music video over to Much Music. I don't know. Like, I guess it kind of makes sense for them to have a decent cut if
Yeah.
they were like kind of the sole reason why your music video is being seen by millions of people.
Right.
Now,
Sure.
if you are doing that, what is their cut for? Like,
Yep.
that doesn't make sense.
Right.
So I would hope labels now are like actually giving people better deals because, like, oh,
Yep.
you are creating all these TikToks and millions of views. You're our marketing team. Okay, you get a bigger cut now. If they're still giving the same deals that they were given like in the early 2000s,
Yeah.
that's insane. But I kind of get it back in the day. Like,
Yeah.
really
Yeah,
thought of
yeah,
that,
yeah.
but now I'm thinking about it. It's like, I don't know. Like, they were responsible for distribution. Da-da-da-da.
Yes. And now I've been hearing this term. It's been around for a bit, but now I'm only getting exposed to this term now. But artists are now signing admin deals. And it's basically basically they sign a deal with, like, let's say an administrative team that takes care of your distribution, that takes care of a lot of the business side of things, for an artist, rather than going to a label and the admin takes, I don't know, whatever, a 5 to 10% cut, on your master or whatever, but basically not handing it over to a label, but just handling that admin side of a label to just an administrative team. Yeah, just something to look out for the listeners as well. Let's move on to the next segment. Your origin story. Can
Yeah.
you give me the lowdown on where you grew up, and your creative upbringing? So, like, family, friends, and high school.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Since I can remember, I was just obsessed with music, and this album thing kind of followed me from like a young age. I always was like very like into albums,
Yeah.
and go with my dad to HMV all the time, and
Yeah. Shout out
we,
to HMV.
oh my
Wow.
God, the
Yeah.
best. And I would just, there was nothing like it, man. Just walking around and the big one down at Young and Dundas, like, oh, I would, it was just a dream for me.
Yeah.
My favorite thing in the world to go and get a couple albums, and
In
so
CD
yeah,
form
kind of
primarily.
CD form primarily back
Yeah.
then,
Yeah.
and now, funny enough, but so it kind of just started from there, and I don't know, but I didn't. So as I got into like high school and stuff, I wasn't like in bands. Like, I would do, like, at my school, we would have like, we had something called like NT Idol, which was like our high school's like American Idol or Canadian Idol, and
There you go.
that a couple times, and sang like Frank Sinatra and some stuff. And we had like a fashion show in high school, and me and some buddies did like a Two Door Cinema Club song, and that was kind of like my
Right.
first time like playing live and like in a band, and I loved it. But I just looked at other bands and I was just like, how would I ever do that? Like, it just didn't make sense to me how I would ever get to a point where I'd be in like a touring band. I had no knowledge of that
Right.
world. But then I went to uni, and from there, I would just like try to meet people to like play in a band with me. I would just like
meet
people in class or like whatever. And I would just kind of look at them and be like, oh, do you do music? And I would just kind of be like, let's jam sometime. Like I was pretty desperately trying to just find people to jam with or whatever. But then, so I met a couple guys and made some tracks. And, from there we did some demos like at the end of university, like fourth year. And I made this one song with a friend of mine that I was like, oh, I want to do it like professionally. I got to get it like mixed properly. And then,
right.
So then a friend of mine, Zach, was like, oh, this guy, Mike Brandolino, that I went to high school with is in this band Valley and they're doing pretty well. Like you should reach out. And I was never afraid of reaching out to anyone. I think that's why I'm in sales now is I've never afraid of just, I had this vision. I was like, I got to hit the right people and make sure that, you know, I have the best of the best. So I reached out to Mike and I was like, hey, I have this song. It was called Satin White. And it was, we released it under the name No Disco. And I was like, hey, would you mix the song? And he was like, yeah. So I was like, okay, great. So then he mixed the song. I put it out again, not really with any sort of plan or any sort of like backbone to what I was doing. Like I was just some guy.
Sure.
That had a song and we put it out, had a couple thousand plays, and that was kind of that. But then me and Mike kept talking, and I can't remember what the next step was, but I think I sent that to him. And then I was playing an open mic in Kensington, Toronto.
Yeah.
And I invited him. I was like, hey, like, would you come to this? And he was like, yeah. So then Mike came all the way down from Oakville because he lived there at the time and came and watched me do this open mic. And he like talked to me after. He was like, we should work on some stuff together. Like, right. I know you've done these demos, whatever, but like, I think we should like create songs together from like scratch.
Right.
Wow. Like this guy's like in this band. They like play at the time. I don't think they were signed yet. And like, you know, I saw them playing the Horseshoe and everything. I was like, wow. Like these guys are like,
yeah. Right.
So then he invited me to his house. And again, I can't overstate this enough. Like I had no background of like recording or like knowing what the hell I was doing. Like the song that I made, like I just bought some stuff and a keyboard and Logic, and I just kind of like made it happen. But like I had no idea how to properly record like an actual band.
And sure.
So I remember going to Mike's house and he was tracking, I think Rob and Alex had this side project called National Parks.
Yes. Yeah.
You know about that?
Yeah.
They were tracking that. And I was like, what? Like, they were like recording and then they're going, no, okay, let's track that again. I was like, whoa.
Right.
An actual studio.
Yeah.
Truly, like, as a fan of music, like my whole life, but like I never was technical. I never was in bands. I was like, this is cool, man. Like, this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
Then from there, I think Mike and I started demoing some stuff. And that's where Thoughts From Your Car, Fond, and the song A Call From Me came from. And from there, Babyface, the producer from the 90s, who I love, R&B, even produced a Fall Out Boy song, but anyway, he, just a legend.
Yeah.
Was doing the song camp, and I think I don't think Mike sent it to me. Someone sent it to me and was like, oh, you should send your songs. Like, they're, if you get into the song camp, it's like a week at Revolution Studios in Toronto, and everything's paid for, and you do all these sessions, whatever. And I was like, never done anything like that, but I was like,
right,
yeah, let's send them. So we sent those two demos. I think it was Thoughts From Your Car and Fond, and a couple of days later we got an email being like, yeah, we love it, Babyface loves the songs, come to the song camp. So we got a
crazy yeah,
who was like, I did not know at all how to be in the music industry, that I ever would. I was just, what is going on? And that was kind of like because I got my degree and I was like, oh, I want to do music. But
right.
My parents were always like, I don't know. They weren't like, don't do it. But they're like, I don't know.
What was your degree in? Sorry. And where did you go?
Communication studies. I went to Laurier.
Okay, great.
So that my dad was like, that's pretty cool. Okay.
Yeah.
A bit. So then I'm not going to go through everything, but it was kind of from there that, so that happened. And then, you know, Mike and I made the songs, and then, I had become good friends with like Valley as a band because Alex, you know, became a friend of mine and was really hyped about the project. And it was this really sweet thing where, you know, me being inexperienced, I just had all of this love from like, you know, this band that was doing really well. And,
yeah,
they kind of helped me with like finding my band, who was, you know, Ben Lee and Ben Rudy at the time. And it just kind of happened from there. And then we played their first show ever was Alex's basement for New Year's.
Okay.
And we had the in-ears going and lights. And I think Nate actually did the lights. Like he was just, what's it called when the lighting guy just like does it without a plan? There's a name for it. I don't know. Nate was just freeballing it, just doing
it. Yeah, fantastic.
And it was awesome. And then, yeah, we just got the live show together. We rehearsed a bunch, and then we played the Horseshoe. And then we were asked to do the school night with Drake, or we were asked to do school night at the Drake, and then COVID happened. And then...
Oh, wow.
So we...
Okay.
That's why COVID was so tough for me, because we were developing this, like... a pop act that was like, you know,
right,
built our rig, obviously, that you're very familiar with.
Yes.
And you know, just all this planning, like there was just all this kind of hype around the No Disco project, and like the songs were doing well on Spotify, and I was just so happy.
Yeah,
all this happening. And then COVID, and then I was like, what the hell? So that's obviously, tons of stuff has happened since then, but
yeah,
it was beginnings. And I would just say, like, in short, it was just kind of like, I don't know, my will, like, I just had such a belief in the songs and like me as like a performer and artist. And I just never knew how to get the people around me to help the vision happen. And it happened. So like, the one thing I really do believe in is like, if you have a really great vision and you just keep going, like people will see it and rally behind you. And I'm very grateful for everyone who has ever, you know, helped this project, because it's crazy the amount of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm very proud of all of it.
Fantastic. You touched on a whole bunch of things, and thank you for that. Do you remember like one moment that really like changed things for you, whether it be that you know, that Babyface camp, or get going to Mike's basement or Alex's basement, seeing them record a project like that? Is there like another moment, maybe even a recent moment, that like really just changed things for you? Maybe even if it's like early on as well, like pre-project. Maybe it's another show that you saw and you're like, oh my gosh, I really want to do this. This is actually possible.
Well, now that you're framing it like that, I remember seeing, I really like this band Bad Sons. And I remember me and my buddy Will went to a Bad Sons show. And I think this was before I had actually done any of like the Horseshoe or Alex's Basement, whatever.
Yeah,
I remember my buddy Will like looking back at me and being like, you're going to be doing this soon. And I remember being like, yeah, I am. Because I was, again, like I would go to a ton of shows and I loved music, but I just never was like, could I actually be like one of those guys on the stage? Like I actually
sure.
So, yeah, I think I just had like a ton of moments like that where, you know, I was going to shows and like so, you know, so wanting like to do that and never thinking I could. So when it really happened, it just, I couldn't be more stoked. Like, it's just all I ever wanted was, And again, it's not like I needed to play for arenas or whatever, but I just wanted to be able to like play in a band. And I, you know, and obviously how I've kind of framed it, it was always very hard to like, you know, get a band. Like in high school when I wanted, like even in high school, I wanted to, and I was like, do it the way that everyone does it, where like you tour and whatever. And all my friends were like, I'm going to Queens. I got to go.
Yeah.
And I just felt all the time that I was just like begging people to like, come on, let's just do it. And like, you know, everyone has their own thing, and I'm not like resentful, obviously, but
yeah,
it was just tough because I was always like, I want like a band. Right. So, you know, when I met Mike and all this stuff kind of started happening, it's like I got my dream came true. Like I had a band and all this stuff, and I still feel so lucky that like the first two songs I put out like did really well on Spotify and like, you know, made people believe in what I was doing. Like it was a really incredible you know, turn of events that I'm very grateful for.
Fantastic. Great. Well, let's jump to some other segments. I wanted to talk about just general band stuff. If you had to restart, let's say No Disco in 2024, what would you have done differently? Almost on sort of on the same wave that we've been talking about, but would you have done things differently, like from the beginning, if you had to restart?
Yeah, like as 2024 as this sounds, like I really wish that I had gone to therapy earlier and kind of had my head screwed on a little better.
Sure.
At the beginning, because I think I was just so anxious throughout the whole thing and like wanting to do it perfect and, you know, all this stuff, that I think that if I was who I am now and like far more grounded and self-aware and, you know, able to control anxiety, and because I cared so much, right? Like,
sure.
Especially once the train started going, I was like, I need to make sure that this doesn't go off the tracks. And I just became so like intense and obsessive about every little move I made to because I was like, the question every day was, how do I, you know, bring this to the point where I'm touring everywhere and like there's demand and
Right.
Every day I would wake up insanely stressed about that, rather than now I would know that to be a thing, but then it'd be like, okay, it's like balanced with this and like whatever. But I was constantly so anxious about how do I not let this die? Because music is a attention game. You gotta make sure that you're constantly keeping people engaged and
Yeah, top of mind. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was just so probably no, definitely to a fault, and definitely like not, it didn't need to be this bad, but I was just like very, I just overthought too much. So if I could go back, that's what I would do. I would be, and I think that everyone should be like this, you know,
sure.
And be so stressed. And that's what I think, going back to like the TikTok stuff, is it's hard now not to, because you are competing for people's attention more than ever now. It's just undeniable. So
yes,
how do you not get stressed? It's tough.
And you're not necessarily only competing with other artists on TikTok and other artists on just socials and just music, but you're also competing with Netflix and going to the park or hanging out with your friends. It's a weird thing where it's like it's all about, unfortunately, honestly, it sucks that I'm even saying this, but it's all about attention span now. Yeah. And it's like, what are you going to be concentrating on? And music is just one of those things now, amongst a lot of things.
Also competing with podcasts.
Exactly. Like, yes.
You know?
Oh, 100%. Thanks for listening, everybody.
There's just, you know, we've just created a million more ways to, you know, hit our dopamine receptors, and
yeah,
music is one, but now there's a lot more. And yeah, it's just, it's, I don't know how as a modern artist you couldn't be stressed, especially if you're thinking of it, if you were just like popped into the world and you had no recollection or understanding of how the music industry was before and you just started, you'd probably be okay. You'd just be like, this is the way it is. But
yeah,
in what we've kind of discussed with like Much Music and all these kind of conglomerates that were the means that people, you know, saw music, and also like, you know, the fact that music was so much harder to produce, like not even too long ago.
Right.
Now there's everyone, like I even just saw a TikTok, some dude was just like, my song's on the Billboard top 200 and I recorded it on my iPhone. It's like everyone can record.
yes.
What makes your
a lot less barriers.
Yeah, like God, you gotta really convince people now why your thing is special, because
yeah,
there's a billion people just like you. So it's stressful. I don't know how you couldn't be stressed.
Yeah. So you heard it here, folks. Go to therapy. Go to therapy. I hope it's not the first time that you hear this. But no, I mean, I didn't necessarily know you in that time when you started up. But just between you and I's conversation over the last month, you've really even felt yourself change over the past year, maybe. And you also credited your girlfriend as well in our conversations. Yeah. And can you talk about sort of that? Maybe not like you don't have to shed all the secrets and stuff, but how sort of that relationship sort of changed your just way of thinking and way of being and just grounding yourself.
Yeah. She is amazing. And yep. I think like what really drew me to her, is like, she's like very creative as well. Like she works in film. Mm-hmm. And I think that I was going through a really tough time as, you know, a guy in approaching his late 20s and like being like, you know, all my buddies have like finance or, you know, work at banks or real estate.
sure.
Still just the artist. And when we met, she just immediately was like, what you do is so awesome. And like, she just loved what I did and who I was in that moment, where transparently in that moment was around when we met, was an insanely hard time of me,
right,
off like the worst anxiety I've ever had in my life. And she really helped, she really helped me, you know, get away from that really tough time and, you know, fall back in love with music and, you know, be happy with everything I did, because I burnt out like the end of 2022 and had a really tough beginning of 2023. But she definitely was instrumental in you know, grounding me, and I think that as artists and people that pursue creative or, you know, even small business and restaurants, like in the struggle, you don't think about like how much it means to other people and like the beauty of what you built and whatever. You get so frustrated on finances or this or that, and that was kind of what happened. And I kind of got away from like, damn, I made some really great art and I should be like proud of that. Like you get so frustrated. And I think that meeting her, it really helped me appreciate and be proud of what I did, and
helped
me transition into this, like, you know, person who I am now, where like I have a job, but then I'm also doing I'm still doing music. And as you know, we played our two biggest shows after 4 years of doing this, like end of a week, like
in 1 week. Yes,
1 week. Played the Great Hall, and then obviously the Dirty Loops show to like almost 1,000 people. And
yeah,
you know, I think that I've just learned so much this year And I wish I could tell, you know, older me that, you know, everything was going to be okay, because, you know, back then I was so like, what the hell? Like, I just didn't understand. And I think that the past bit has been very grounding, and, you know, I just could hear.
And it's interesting to reference the older you, but like you've said as well, like, that's only a year ago, you know, beginning of 2023. So
yeah, it's crazy how much life can change. And that's why, like, man, I'm such an advocate for mental health and people like making sure that they, you know, get help they need, because in moments like that, like, it's really hard to see the other side, but God, there is. And like, I'm so grateful for like everyone that like helped me through like definitely the toughest year of my life, but honestly the most important year of my life, where so many necessary and good changes happened. So
fantastic. Want to move on to the next one. You know, I coined it as Chris Dufexis, the music discoverer. I don't know. Now, looking back on that title of the segment, I'm not sure if I would have named it again, but maybe like more of like the A&R. We talked about it at the beginning of the episode. But just like your love of music and discovering new artists and the rarity of some of your items that you had. I also want to talk about a recent experience that I had with you in your car about this band called D Sound. And just between you and I was playing it yesterday for a friend of mine, and we had a jam in the car as well. But I just wanted to talk about your love of discovering and collecting old copies of music, like CDs and stuff, but also just discovering new music. How did that start for you, and why? Is there a why, or did it just come naturally?
Yeah, so I think, you know, going back, I think that the HMV days,
yes.
I don't know what brought me to that, but...
Yeah, like maybe like your relationship with your dad or something like that, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. I think I've always loved... like in the creative space, like physical copies, like not even just music, like even like, you know, I have like a PS1, PS2, and like all whatever. I love like physical copies and the artwork, and I need them to be complete and all this stuff. So I don't know why, but that's just the thing with me. And when it really started in terms of me digging like I did was in university. Honestly, probably a big influence to it was Apple Music. I think at the time I was using Apple Music. I still do, but I've kind of switched between Spotify, and I've even used Tidal before. But when they introduced like fans also like and all that, I just would dig. And again, I don't know if I said this to you when we spoke last, but I just had this thing where I was like, I wanted to find the best stuff that like no one knew about. And I don't know why, but I don't know, it was just cool to me. I think it was cool to me, like, because I got very, you know, in all the music I created with Millen, even with Mike as well, but I love pop songwriting. Like when I hear like a fantastic hook, it's like my favorite thing in the world. So like I was just kind of at a point where it was like, okay, like I've heard like September by Earth, Wind and Fire, and like I've heard all this stuff, like could I find, like I think maybe like the game I had in my head was like, can I find hits that like people know about, but like, you know, that aren't that big.
Aren't top of mind. You're treasure hunting, basically.
Exactly. Treasure hunting is probably a very good word for it. So, yeah, I don't know. So through university, like my thing was I would just dig through through Spotify and Apple Music. And from there, I just found so many records, and kind of like my methodology was like, I would find it on Apple Music. And then I used the site called Discogs to buy all my copies. So then I would buy the vinyl, or now it's the CD. And I don't know. I just love having a collection. Like, I just love physical art. And it's just like, that's why
I love that.
I don't know. Like, what is the point of just, like, it's my thing with like streaming service too. It's just like, isn't it nice to like have stuff? Like, I was even thinking about this the other day, because I feel recently like my Apple Music, like when you open Apple Music, it's immediately just showing you what you recently added. So recently there's been a couple records that like I scroll and I'm like, oh yeah, I haven't listened to this in so long. Like, why haven't I listened to this?
Right.
And it's like, because it's the UI of this is like, it's kind of hard. You have to dig to like find stuff. But like, if I have a CD collection and like I have like a CD player or like headphones or whatever, every day when I'm like, I'm going to listen to music, I'm going to scan this whole thing and see everything and go, okay, that's what I want to listen to.
But right.
With this, I just find it harder.
It's hidden. Harder. Yes.
Hidden. Like, I'm just like, oh yeah, that. Yeah. I haven't listened to that. But like, my CD collection, I love constantly scanning it and be like, oh yeah, I have that.
Right. You're reminded of things.
Yeah. I'm just like, man, I have all this stuff. This is great.
Yeah. So, like,
I don't know. Well, I forgot what the initial question was.
Well, no, that's fantastic. I think there's also a sense of not necessarily like ownership to these things as well, but it's also like almost like commitment. As well, commitment. It's like I'm committed to this artist. I bought this thing, and I can go, and it's physically right here. You know, I can go, and I know, it's a weird thing where it's like also confirming to yourself that I am a fan of this person because I do own this CD.
Yeah,
you know, and I can sort of I've impacted, how do I say that? It's like, I've committed, yes, my time, but also some money to this artist, because now on streaming platforms, you could be like, oh, okay, well, I gave this artist 0.000001 of my time, basically.
Exactly.
I don't know. There's like a sort of a romanticism there as well. And I grew up with vinyl and CDs as well. Talking about that. And I've always loved having like physical copies of things.
I want to say one more thing on that.
Yeah, like, please.
Going back to what we were talking about earlier with like, I think when you are asking me about why full albums, and it's like, well, you see like the whole vision of, you know, a project. So like when an album top to bottom, you see the purpose. So with having a vinyl or CD, I like also seeing the photos and like,
yes,
what was the aura of the record and like
the liner notes, the thank yous.
Yeah. Thank yous. Like the engineers. Everything.
Yes. Credits. Like,
having that is having that moment in time.
Yeah.
Right. So like, it's very, I don't know. Like if you're into a record a lot, there's nothing better that you can have to totally like encompass the creation of that work than to have that where you're getting the photos, you're getting everything, and here is we spent a year recording this album about all these things and heartbreak and all this shit, and here's photos that set the mood, and here you go. And it's like, well, 100% I have to have that if I care about the record. I can stream it, but like I want to, when I think or listen to that album, to be like get sucked into that world again. I think that's like that's what I like about having a CD, is like when I am on streaming, it's like, okay, play it, cool. But like when I'm sitting down and like putting a CD on or whatever, I'm every time I'm doing that, I'm getting back into the world that they created. And I think that's the coolest thing about music. I personally, that's why I'm not into playlists, is it's like, you know, you just kind of bump around, but like when I put a record on, I am myself putting myself in that studio or in that world that they created. And as an artist, I don't think that you want a fan like me, and I would want fans like this, you know?
You're right. Yes. Yeah.
create, like, that is the best feeling ever, to have someone like take in your art like that and take it that seriously. And, you know, I like to create for people that are like that as well, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I also think that like a single isn't enough time to tell a whole story as well, you mm-hmm. know? And I think it's very important. The album format is so important to just physically, yes, but also just from a story perspective. It's hard to attach your fans to just one sort of 3.5 minute song, you know? Yeah. Anyway, it makes me think about a conversation I had a few days ago as well with a friend. We were talking about how a discography is now becoming important again, because the TikTok artist, I think, has passed, I believe, and that fans need to get hooked to more than just one song.
For sure.
Because, you know, they're going to discover you via one song, probably via social media, but then it's very important to have like a story, a discography that they can look back on and discover more and get hooked, because, you know, because you again, like we were talking about, you're competing with other artists now on your attention span. And if you can have a story to tell through multiple songs and records and albums, EPs, whatever, it just helps with that, like, artist or audience generation. And I think just albums are fantastic. And I love albums.
Yeah, so I guess, like, there's a light at the end of the tunnel where, like, I think people do still appreciate that, right?
Oh, I agree. And without knowing.
Yeah, I think that, like, as creators, we start going, everyone's likes this TikTok thing now, and we're all doomed. It's like, I don't think that's necessarily the case. Like,
right.
Definitely still exists, but yeah, it's just very competitive.
Yeah. To you, why should people discover more music? And let's talk about the importance of discovering music for people, but also just for artists as well.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
Well, for artists,
yeah,
like, what I think it's the most important thing in the world, but it depends what kind of artist you plan on being. Like, for me, what I always wanted No Disco to be was like this project that like just spanned genres and like in the most intense way. Like, I kind of like how I would treasure hunt and try to find, like, I had this thing where like particularly I have this song called In Bloom that is just like literally a house song with like jazzy piano and stuff.
Yeah.
And then a song like A Long Talk at Taylor's, like, I wanted to have such a stark, undeniable difference in like my sound, probably to my fault, because the Spotify algorithm doesn't like that. They like
it's true.
Things very uniform.
Genre based, yes.
But for me, digging through, like, I think that's why No Disco is what it is because just the amount of different music that I've dove into is just crazy. Like, I would say that, like, one of the biggest examples of that is like Moonlight My Bedroom, which obviously kind of reads, you know, like just like an indie pop song. But in the bridge, when we were making that song, Millen also has a very eclectic taste, we were like, how are we going to make this like really cool and different and like not like any other indie pop song? And then I'm a big bossa nova guy, so I love Gilberto. And we were like, let's just do like a bossa nova bridge. So it's got that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that diving into as much music as possible, it's like when you're creating, it's not copying, but like when I create, I go, oh, yo, like, you know, me listening to that much stuff and in depth made it so that when we were making an indie pop song, I went, let's do the Joao Gilberto thing.
Yes. So
more music.
It's choices.
Yeah.
And it's options and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. You can be like, let's do something like that.
Yes.
Or I could be like, yo, let's make a freaking D sound type song.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I also liked, in doing that, having obscure references that if people listened to me, they wouldn't be able to know. Like, I didn't want people to just go like, oh, that kind of sounds like Joy Division. Like, I wanted to reference something that the average person wouldn't even know how, like, to reference it, because I don't, you know what I mean?
Right.
I do believe in the thing that all good art is borrowed, or whatever people say.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. So I was like, how do I yeah. references that like no one's going to know about.
Yeah. So. How do I get away with it? Yeah, I completely also believe in that all art is created or has already been created, and we're just borrowing kind of thing from different influences and making our own palette. And just to what you're saying as well, like, it's all about like expanding your musical library is also expanding your palette in regards to, okay, let's say when we're playing with the primary colors like red, blue, yellow, or whatever. But as you go on, as you discover more, it's like if your color palette was ever expanding, and now you're getting into the RGB color scheme, and you got the codes now and stuff, and you can reference all these things. And it's not necessarily to flex that you're listening to all this music, but especially for artists, it's really much being like, oh, like I remember last year I was checking out this album, let me go dig through it, let's go see what they did and that stuff. And I think it's really important to just do that, but also for just the quote-unquote average music listener, it's great because it just expands the cultural horizons and discovering more stories and being informed by a whole bunch of different stuff. So I think that's really fantastic. Chris, just to wrap up this segment and all basically this podcast, just a couple more questions. But what are you looking forward to right now?
In music.
Music or life?
Well, I'm looking forward to the Joe Show tonight for sure.
There you go. Yeah.
In Buffalo.
Yeah.
Let me see 90s R&B. But yeah, like in terms of like No Disco, we actually had plans to like record the next project at the beginning of this year, but then I got a full-time job. So it's kind of like paused it for a bit, but like we have some really, really cool demos. I actually made a demo with Mike the other day. I should send it to you.
Yes. I saw that on Instagram here.
That's awesome. And it was like the first, we haven't written together in like 3 or 4 years. And the first thing we just sat down and did is awesome. So I'm really nice. Hyped on that. So yeah, I'm starting to kind of like see the project come about. So yeah, I'm looking forward to putting this together. And I think it's exciting that I don't know exactly what it's going to be yet, but
yeah,
I don't think I've ever been more like stoked because of like, you know, how much has developed with me personally in the last year. Like, I'm excited to go into a project with no stress, no expectations really. And, you know, off of like a couple shows that have made me feel like really great. And hopefully kind of expanding off of that. But
yeah,
I'm just looking forward to like more shows and just a next project and seeing what it's gonna look like. But
fantastic. And lastly, what's the dream?
The dream is to be absolutely content in your creative endeavor and have it not stress you out. That's the dream to me, because art and creating has always been such an important, integral part of my life. And I think I'm starting to live the dream where I'm creating because I want to create.
Yeah.
When I did not put so much pressure on myself, I had, you know, the biggest show opportunities of my career thus far happen. So I think that the dream of, you know, taking that pressure off of yourself creatively and letting it be, because I think that's what a good creative should be and where it should come from, is just true natural expression.
Yeah.
That is the dream. And that, I think, is, you know, ultimately what people will connect with the most, is when you're being your truest self. And you know, I'm hyped to kind of be there now and to in my own time create this next thing and see what the future holds.
Fantastic. Wrapping it up with the producer's game here. For those of you, that's the first time that you're listening to the Cloud Machine podcast, we do a couple games here, and we usually, you know, lately we've done a lot of Dream Fest games where basically give the chance, our guests the chance to basically program their own festival. But today I wanted to do the producer's game, the other game that we play here on the podcast, basically giving the chance to our guest to basically executive produce their dream album. So Chris, you saw it in the document that I forwarded along to you. But for those who don't know the producer's game, I basically ask the questions. It's executive producing your record, but it's basically picking who would be the artist, like putting out the record, who would be producing the album, the band in the studio itself, as in, you know, you could pick Electric Ladyland or Abbey Road, but then also in which city it would be, as in you could put Abbey Road in New York, is the example I always give, and in what era that album would be in. And for you, Chris, I added the theme and the story of the album, as in what would be the story and what the album would be about. So I can give you a couple minutes if you want to think about it, and we can be right back. All right, everybody. So we are back. We've given Chris a little bit of time to think about his producer's game. Chris, what do you got for us?
Okay, so I think a lot of people know this about me. I am an insanely big Justin Bieber fan. Like,
there you go.
huge Bieber fan. Like, back to the first EP, Deep Cuts, you name it. Like, I truly believe he's got the best voice in the world. Like,
there you go.
He is unbelievable.
Okay. So
the thing with me and Bieber, though, is I've always gone, I feel like he needs a really personal, stripped back, but vocally very interesting record.
Yeah.
And kind of showed hints on that on his record Changes. Like, the last four or five songs are almost just him and an acoustic guitar, and vocally is incredible. And I just always went, God, he needs to do more like this. So
right.
The album would be put out by Bieber.
Okay.
Be produced by Quincy Jones.
There you go.
So it would be stripped back a bit, but I also would want some like MJ kind of like funky kind of stuff going on.
Sure.
We're going to have John Mayer and his band. So we got John Mayer on guitar. We got Steve Jordan. We got Pino Palladino.
There you go. Okay. Fantastic start.
We're going to do it at Abbey Road.
Okay.
I feel like Bieber needs to be there to really just, I want this album to be organic. So I want to be in a place that, you know, kind of speaks to that. And then I think it would be in the 70s or 80s.
Okay, great.
Thematically, and he did kind of do this on Changes, but I really want to see this from Bieber. I want to see him really diving into like personal stuff. And particularly, I think it would be really interesting if he really talked about his struggles with fame and, you know, as a kid, and like just living truly this life that no one ever has lived, you know, like,
right.
Think of that, like, from the psychology perspective of like, this guy has lived, like, he doesn't have any of our kind of experiences. Like, he truly has lived a life that no one has lived.
Yeah.
So it would be interesting to hear him really actually go into detail, and especially singing over all of that with a stripped incredible band and musicianship, and
yeah,
all his vocal runs and just singing about real shit. I think that needs to happen. I don't know. Obviously, it wouldn't be this band. I think it would be cool if it was Mayer and his band, but like Quincy.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah, sure.
Bieber does need to do something like that, and fantasizing about this, it's a good maybe precursor. I hope his next thing is.
Yes. If you get the chance to executive produce his next record, it's going to be that.
That would be my dream.
Fantastic, man. Well, that's how we wrap up the Cloud Machine podcast. Man, thanks for being on. It was so great to talk to you about, you know, the origin story, how you think about the music business, even like talking about your journey over the last year, and what a producer's game as well to talk about that. And it, honestly, just the whole like music discoverer part of the pod is very, very interesting, and I see myself in that a lot as well. Yeah, just discovering new music and stuff like that.
Well, I have many more in the vault here, so I'll send you over some more records to hopefully
please
get you excited. But I gotta say thank you for having me, and what you and Nate are doing with Eights is incredible, as you know, as I've told you many times, and the podcast is amazing, and I was and am very honored to have taken part, so I appreciate it.
Man, thank you very much. Thank you for your words and your constant support. Hopefully we can continue working together. I'm stoked for the next thing. For the people listening, make sure to check out No Disco at No Disco World on all streaming, but also, sorry, all socials. Particularly, also want to thank those who have been listening to the podcast. It's the 61st episode, which is fantastic. Please leave your comment questions below as well. If you're on Apple Podcasts, please leave your review. Subscribe if you're on YouTube. Do a whole thing. Our goal is to really share experiences with the listeners. It doesn't necessarily we don't necessarily frame it as the right or wrong experiences. We're not necessarily telling you what the right or wrong experiences are, but we're sharing other people's stories because it's so subjective. The music industry is so subjective. So please don't hesitate to get to learn more about these experiences through this podcast and through Eights at Eights Creative and Eights Network on all socials and stuff like that. As always, everybody, stay safe, and we will see you next week. Thanks, everybody. Bye.